I gotta let knowledge be heard.
All right, welcome to another edition of Highlander Newsroom. I'm your host, Miles Andrews-Duve, editor-in-chief of the Highlander newspaper. And at the table today, we have
Evan Ismail, assistant news editor.
Jasmine Yamanaka, features editor.
Yeah, it's just us three holding it down. Holding it down. How you guys doing today?
Pretty good. Just tired.
Yeah.
Long day. I know. Like, perpetually.
Yeah. So glad you guys came. We have a few things to get to. We didn't do the show last week for you regular listeners out there, which I'm sure there are plenty. But we do have a lot of stuff to talk about. We'll probably touch on our editorial from that previous week as well as this week's. But let's look at the front cover first. And we look at the front cover of issue, is it already 28? No, we're 27 now, right?
I think it's 27.
Jeez, so, yeah, it's moving fast. Anyway, look at the front cover of issue 27, which is out now. You'll see the ASUCR elections are finally done, completed. And we have an article in which a few of the candidates speak on their goals for the upcoming year. And then we have a list of the elected candidates as well as their potential alternatives. And yeah, so it was a less, I think, stress-free election, at least in the terms of parties not being, you know, parties.
Right.
not having parties. And in our case, our referendum that we were campaigning for, you know, that was very stressful. Unfortunately, that did not pass. But let's talk about the candidates a bit. Aram Ira, he won the presidency over Kevin Sayne, who had unofficially dropped out. And third there was John Tenuse. And I think last was Harpreet, and yeah, so it was not as tight as I thought it was going to be, but overall, what were your thoughts on the elected president that goes to anyone of you?
In regards to president, it seemed Aram had kind of a clear path, if I'm going to be honest, but the alternates kind of came out different than how I thought they would be. I thought Tenuse was going to have a larger following and therefore a larger vote than Kevin Sayne. It doesn't surprise me that Sayne is the alternate, considering, you know, his past positions in ASUCR and the name that goes along with that. So, overall, I'm just glad elections are done for another year.
I was also really surprised with the outcome with the alternates. I thought that Tenuse would at least get second, because I feel like there's been a lot of tensions toward ASUCR and the current people who are in place there. So I thought that considering that a lot of people would want something new and maybe someone who isn't currently in the student government. So I honestly thought he had a chance at winning as well. But I guess overall people felt more comfortable with someone who has experience.
Yeah, what's interesting with the John Tenuse and Sayne and Aram actually, but particularly the relationship between Kevin Sayne and John Tenuse is that, you know, Kevin, as I said, alluded to, like, he officially unofficially dropped out, right? Like, he announced via Facebook, I believe it was the Tuesday, maybe the Monday, opening of elections week, basically saying, hey, like, I'm tired of, you know, campaigning or being involved with ASUCR because of this, and this, corruption and things like that is kind of things he alluded to. But he went on to endorse several of the candidates, such as Jose Cortez Hernandez, who won. I believe he won for the position of, vice president. No, vice president of finance.
Finance.
Which was actually, Kevin Sayne's previous position, or current position. And, yeah, he went on to endorse candidates such as him, such as, again, John Tenuse, who, at the end of the day, only came out to, I believe, just over 500 votes, and Sayne himself got about 800. So it was interesting that I thought it was going to be very close. I thought Tenuse and Aram were going to be the two very close candidates. Aram kind of blew them away with 1,030 votes to, like, Sayne's 809 or something to that nature. So I think overall it's somewhat encouraging for a lot of people, at least people I've spoken to, that Aram is not a part of the Your Side candidate, or excuse me, the Your Side party that has dominated ASUCR in the past 2 years. And since he's not, a lot of people are expecting or hoping for some sort of change in the practices of ASUCR, some more attention to the student body and things of that nature. So we'll see. It's to be decided what kind of power ARM wants to take, right? What kind of decisions he wants to make. And there are still members of the Yorkside Party, you know, good or bad, there are still members of the Yorkside Party within the Senate and within the executive cabinet that were elected this year. Just not as many, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it all remains to be seen. But, you know, watching the debates and even moderating the debates, Aram did have really good answers. And I think for those that do follow ASUCR and do follow the elections and the student government, I think that what he said really had to appeal because, you know, when they read, they picked up a couple of our issues, they'd see, you know, all the rampant corruption that's happening in ASUCR. And I think that for those that were looking for maybe a better alternative, listening to what he had to say during the debates and during the election season, I think really appealed to a lot of, obviously, the 1,030 that voted for him, apparently.
I wouldn't even call it corruption per se, in many respects, but I mean there is indeed. But I think a lot of what the issue that people point to is just the overall self-interest. A lot of these student representatives are more interested in them as the representative than the students they're supposed to represent, and that seems to be the case both with discussions I've had and just both with the actions that have taken or I guess not been taken. In many respects this year to, you know, work toward obvious glaring student issues, right? So hopefully that these elected candidates have a better ear to the ground and are more in tune with the student issues and student needs and where student funds should be allocated. I know one of ARM's big platforms or one of the big parts of his platform was to readjust the, I don't think completely eliminate ARGEAR, but at least readjust the money allocated toward programs such as ARGEAR. So we'll see what the future of that is going forward. But yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, the campaign really became anti-ARM, but he came out on top. Tanous, as you remember, you were there for the presidential debate.
Yeah.
He was, you know, outright kind of attacking or pointing out hypocrisies in ARM's argument, his past history, because he did run with your side as senator, and you know, obviously has gone to oppose himself thus far, or, you know, since then, and Tanous has pointed things like that out, or that he supported programs like ARGEAR, now doesn't want to, you know, continue those, and that's the same thing, you know, Kevin Sane was doing the same, and it was kind of a all against ARM, and the fact that he came out so clearly on top was really surprising, but
yeah,
I think if you really think about it in retrospect, it's like, if you had, I think Kevin and Tanous really split the votes amongst themselves, right? Because I guess because Kevin is so popular, right? His name's on the ballot, people decided to vote for him. But if you took Kevin's name completely on the ballot, I think we would have had a much, much closer thing between Tanous and ARM. Because I think all those people who voted for Kevin would have voted for him.
Definitely.
The majority of them.
Yeah, I think it would have been a lot closer than the results now. Yeah. I completely agree with that.
Yeah. Anyhow, any other candidates that you were excited to see elected? Or?
I was really happy that Maryam Al-Khalili won her CHAS Senate seat. She's a good person. I think she's going to do really well with in her time, in her year as senator for CHAS.
Yeah, there's some good people out there. I mean,
I was really happy to see Roy Tongilava. I think he was like the number one voted CHAS senator. Yeah, his place is like the first one. And I think he's the first Tongan person in our student government. And overall, I know that the Pacific Islander demographic at UCR is pretty small. So I'm glad to see a change there.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm excited to see who the next elections director.
That will definitely be interesting. Applications just came out, I think, about a week ago.
As well as the judicials for next year. Who's going to take the next three seats. That will be interesting.
A lot of turn taking turns this year, so we'll see.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I was talking to Arm the other day, and I know he wants to. He at least based on what he told me, he wants to elect the judicial council members in a more fair and objective manner. That's what he says. He says that historically, it's been, you know, are you going to endorse me or are you not? You know, are you going to support me and this and that? And that's kind of been the criteria for whether people put up certain council members to vote. But yeah, we'll see. I think that sways, as we've seen this year, that probably sways a lot of things, at least to the level, if not more so, than a lot of what Senate or ECAB does throughout the year. So yeah, judicial is very important and crucial.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely seen their role come out in the past couple of months.
Yeah, you've been at the meetings.
Yes, I have. Yeah, I've been covering the meetings. So they've been interesting, especially, what was it, 2 weeks ago? That meeting went on for, like, I think almost 2 hours. And elections cases and Marcy Kuo, the elections director, versus Shafi Kareem, the current president. So that was a very interesting meeting. So they get pretty interesting. I encourage students to go and check them out, usually Tuesday at 12 p.m. in the Senate chambers. So.
Unless they're rescheduled.
Unless they're rescheduled, which is usual. So
quite often. But nonetheless, let's move to our editorial. In this week's issue, we had a pretty good commentary on the $175 million reserve from the UC Office of the President. You and I, Evan, you were here, I believe, at that show when we talked about it a bit on the day it happened. We didn't hear your thoughts on it, Jasmine, so good you're here to get a new perspective. Yeah, for those who, at this point, I guess, don't know, the UC Office of the President, Janet Napolitano, through an audit, was found to have a reserve on hold of $175 million. It has been refuted by Napolitano, who basically says, yeah, this is money that we allocate for specific funds, this and that. But nonetheless, I think the fact remains, at least in our editorial board's eyes, that, hey, these were hidden regardless. Like, whether they are being put to use, they were hidden. And if they are not being put to use or can be put to use for other things, such as something to help not raise tuition, that would probably be the most ideal scenario. So here we are. What do you think of, one, I guess, the response, and then two, overall, the revelation that was made via the audit of the $175 million?
You can go, Jasmine.
Well, Janet Napolitano defended it by saying that a portion of that was allocated to the medical school at UCR, as well as various other programs throughout the UC system. But there's still around $88 million that was just left there being unused, which I think is a little bit sketchy, because if they wanted to improve the system immediately and if they felt more urgency toward it, I think that they would have found a way to use it now rather than to save it up for kind of unpredictable measures in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's completely it's reasonable to have reserve money. I mean, because, if there's a crisis, then, they need some money to be able to offset whatever they need to do. But I think that the fact that it was hidden and the fact that, the regents proceed to, and the Office of the President proceed to raise tuition regardless of all this money that's being hidden away, I think that it's really unfair that we should have to pay more when they have, I think $88 million just sitting practically in a bank vault. I mean, of course, that's a little bit of it's hyperbole, but, when you think about it, it's unfair that we have to pay more when they have all this money stored away,
Exactly. I think that the tuition in the UC system currently is a impending problem, and it's something that affects a lot of students. So I think that if the regents felt more urgency toward that problem, they would have used the funds that are currently being used for nothing.
Yeah, I think I talked about it on our show when we first discussed this 2 weeks ago. But overall, it's again not a very surprising revelation, but it's a pretty damning revelation as well, right? Like it's like wow, you know?
Yeah.
It's wow, but it's not surprising that it's been based on, I guess, the history of the regents and the Office of the President, in which they have shown, I guess, a very scant interest in really serving or being in touch with the students. It's funny because I feel like I'm talking about ACCR again. But it does feel like this is just okay. Maybe the biggest revelation to reveal, to actually bring that to light to others who either were unaware or on the fence about that. I don't have much more to say about it. I think her response was also bothersome for me. You know, the fact that she went out to completely try to absolve herself of any blame, but. You know, I guess what else would you expect someone to do? Like, if I were in that situation, I had a bunch of people, PR people, telling me things as well. You know,
right?
That's what you expect. But it's just still, you know, what are we going to do about tuition? It feels like, and I don't know, has there been any updates since? I mean, this was about 2 weeks ago when this happened. I don't know if there's been any other updates from her, but it doesn't seem like they're trying to actively address the issues or concerns raised since this, and I feel like they're probably aiming for this to kind of just be swept under the rug, but
No, there isn't any recent news. It's all still from April,
right?
So
yeah, I think that's kind of what they want to do, is they want to operate in that ambiguity, right?
Just let it go away.
Yeah, because I mean that's the thing, right? We've seen it with student government, we see it with politics, you know, on I think every scale, is the amount of people, it's always a small fraction of people interested in, you know, politics, right? Whether it's, you know, student politics, we have a small fraction interested at our campus, and then you look at national politics, you know, world politics, it's continually a smaller percentage. You know, you can just look at the number of people actually voting, but yeah, that's the thing, right? When you have such people, especially nowadays, you have these headlines that come out and say, hey, they were withholding this money, and they had this reserve. People get all worked up about it, maybe for a day or two. But, you know, as other things happen, as, you know, Trump, you know, fires James Comey, and, like, things like that, just continual headlines build on top of others and push the other major ones underneath. After a while, it's like, oh, okay, well.
Yeah, just happened. Eventually nobody cares.
That's unfortunate, right, that they're able, and they use that to their advantage. But, I think I want to hear, and I want to hear a greater response from them. They did, to their credit, the UCOP did hold a press briefing, I believe, on Friday last week, just with Napolitano, with a lot of the student papers, and I heard some good things about it from other editors at other UC papers, but overall, I think more can be done to reach out to the general public. And the thing with that press briefing also, sorry, I feel like I'm like on a rant, but the thing with the press briefing was that we as student editors have to press the Office of the President to actually have that, hold that. At first, we would reach out and they would say, we, meaning like a lot of the UC editors, not all of us, would reach out and they just said, hey, refer to the LA Times article, sorry. And after more action was taken and people with big, more power stepped up to actually, you know, try to push for this, it actually happened. So, again, yeah. Not surprised.
Nope, not surprised at all.
That's the conclusion of all that. But, yeah.
Yep, definitely sketch.
Okay.
If they...
Very sketch.
If she's just like, yeah, refer to this other news source, but can't even give a response herself, that's like us always referring to, like, UCR Today instead of finding first-hand information.
Yeah, I think it's important for them to come on and tell people, especially the student papers that are such an integral part of what makes a UC a UC. I think that they need to be coming out and being honest about it. I mean, I get that, you know, they are a big organization. Maybe being completely honest probably isn't in their best interest, but at least to the point where it doesn't seem like they're just keep trying to hide and hide and hide more things and keep sweeping things under the rug. So they need to be more honest and more forthcoming when things like this happen. That would be my opinion.
Yeah, I think that happens when you actually do care about the people you're, you know, supposed to serve. Like, you'll naturally be transparent. You'll naturally, hey, want to inform people. It shouldn't be
right
that difficult.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
It should not be that hard.
No.
But, you know.
Yeah, I feel like we're talking about student government again.
I know. It kind of looped. It's like a trickle down, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. Because I feel like a lot of the grudges that student government might hold against media outlets such as the Highlander is because they don't want to be transparent, and we kind of push for that. So I feel like if there's any, like, discomfort regarding being transparent with the student body, you just know that there's something sketchy going on.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, when you think about it, I guess when you think about it from their shoes, it would be kind of pesky. I mean, when you think about it, like, you're up there and you're trying to do your thing, and then, you know, you have, you know, papers and media coming to you and wanting to report on things. I guess that could be a little bit pesky, but I mean, if it does feel that way, then there's obviously a disconnect and there's obviously a problem. Yeah, and I think that should be readdressed, especially among, I mean, not only student body, but also, you know, bigger organizations like UCOP and the Regents.
And we kind of have to be that way. It's our jobs to get the information ourselves. Otherwise, people can't get it. Like, we have to provide it for them. So it's not anything personal. It's not like we're trying to persecute them. We're really just trying to be as transparent as possible.
Yeah, so, I think that's definitely something that's just represented in all forms of government. And I think, you know, putting yourselves in their shoes, or putting myself in their shoes, whether it's, you know, an ACCR representative, a regent, or what have you, you know, there is a lot of pressure that comes with that job, external pressure. And so I can understand, you know, wanting your image to be good. But yeah, there's definitely also has to be an understanding of where, you know, you will be held accountable, you know, if it's not by the students, if it's not by the public, you know, depending on what your position is or where you are. You know, at the very least, it should be done by the media, and the role of the media is to be fair and honest in such reporting. So, but that's, I think, the general tug and war that always, you know, has perpetuated, you know, throughout governments and in America, right? Like, that's just
definitely, yeah. It's just the way it is. Yeah,
that's how it is. It's natural. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just more at the forefront now because of Trump's rhetoric, in which he's more direct about it, but it's always been that case.
Definitely.
Yeah. But anyhow, moving forward to our editorial from last week, I really wanted to talk about this last week. We were unable to do so. But in issue 26, we had an editorial on, basically, the title is pretty much gets across what we need to, is that universities need to do a better job of equally protecting their speakers. And this was an editorial that pretty much used the situation with UC Berkeley, in which they canceled a speaking arrangement for conservative speaker Ann Coulter, and I believe, yeah, it was April 29th, and so we used that as a jumping off point, is, hey, like, this is something basically that, an event that should be allowed on campus. There weren't any protests, but it was more so expected protest, expected violence. On the same side of that, you understand Berkeley, in Berkeley's case, right, the Milo situation, which we've, you know, talked about in depth here, is very recent, and I guess gives you more cause for caution, right? Because that did get really, there were literal protests, there was fire, it was really bad. That one was bad. And
that one was bad, yeah.
You want to avoid that. So, but nonetheless, we still believe that should be, at least in my case, and I'll let you guys talk about it as well, obviously, but I think that if you're using that Milo situation as a example, that's not cause for you to, I guess, go under a rock and, you know, shelter yourself, but more so to ramp up your protection and preparation when such events occur, right? Like, if you're having another speaker, like, culture come, that's, you should have better preparation because of that. But nonetheless, you know, what were your guys' thoughts on that? And, just go from there.
Yeah, you know, this is something that really made me angry. I mean, you know, as I obviously lean conservative, and, you know, I don't really, it's not fair for a campus to only cater to just, I get that, you know, conservatives are the minority on campus, and I get that, you know, it's not the university's job to cater to, you know, one political ideology, and it shouldn't. It should not cater to the conservative perspective, and it shouldn't cater to the liberal perspective either. But the one thing is that they should welcome all diverse viewpoints. And I think that students, in particular, who don't like these speakers, don't go. But don't stop other people from going and seeing these speakers. Okay, maybe I want to go see Ann Coulter. Maybe I want to go see Milo. And it's not your job to stop me from going and doing that, because that's infringing on my freedom and my rights to go and see who I want and go listen to the viewpoints I want. And another thing is that what really strikes me as really, it's sad that I find this very funny, but it's also very hypocritical, more hypocritical than funny, that students who can perpetually berate Donald Trump for being a fascist are going around and silencing people from speaking their mind. That is fascist. All right. And I'm not going to comment on what Donald Trump has says or whether Donald Trump is a fascist, but it's hypocritical for students to go around and say, well, Donald Trump is a fascist, so let's go infringe on somebody's right to speak freely. That's so hypocritical, and the disconnect there is really, really, it's insane. So the university needs to do a better job in making sure that speakers are safe and that they have a welcoming environment to come onto and speak different viewpoints, because that's what college is for, is to go and have opinions and your normal, usual lifestyle challenged. And there's not a problem with that. So it's the university really needs to take care in letting speakers come on and at least provide something alternative.
Yeah, I guess the question is, where do you, like, how do you mitigate the, because there will be a response nonetheless, right? And I'm assuming, you know, you're advocating for the free speech of these speakers, which I am as well. You also support or are accepting of the free speech of the protesters in that case, right?
Oh, of course, yeah.
So the question is, because it's like, I feel like a lot of, or at least a bit of this is out of the university's control, in that, you know, if you're a protester, you don't want to limit the right for them to speak and protest, but then also you have to really control that and make sure it's peaceful. And oftentimes peaceful protests are peaceful, you know, because of the protesters, and that can't really be something that's controlled or manufactured by the campus itself, right? So it's a really touchy subject, but how do you think you or university should go about, you know, allowing this speech on both sides or all sides, and also ensuring that everyone's safe? Like, that's the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a tough question. And, you know, like I said before, the university should not be catering to one side or the other. You know, and the protesters have a right to go out and speak, and I'm totally in favor of that. If you don't like something, then you should go out and protest, but, you know, be peaceful about it. You don't have to go out and burn down buildings and throw water bottles at people. You know, you can just simply state your opinion, and I feel like people are going to be more willing to listen to you. At least I'm more willing to listen to people if they're just nice about it. If you know, and on the university's part, it's the university's job to protect both sides, the speaker and the protesters, but they need to have a security apparatus in place that makes sure that both protester and speaker are safe, if that makes sense.
Okay. But in the case of someone like Milo, that's a bit different. You know, because
it's a bit different, you're right.
In that, he was, and we're almost running out of time, unfortunately, but at least as it was reported after, like, he was expected to, you know, call out undocumented students. And at the least, a lot of his rhetoric has been deemed, you know, hateful and damaging for you know, people who are opposed to his viewpoints. So that one, I think, is a lot more touchy than someone like Ann Coulter.
Definitely, definitely.
And so that's, yeah, it just becomes difficult. You really have to know, you know, what you're working with, especially because the UCs, while, you know, they're obviously, they want to be diverse, both in terms of viewpoints, in terms of, but also in terms of culture, in terms of, you know, campus environment and things of that nature. They are inherently liberal campuses. And so you're just in a very difficult, you know.
It's true. Yeah. Hard place. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, sorry, man. We went over time.
We did. We went on a long time.
We got to get out of here. Sorry, guys.
All right.
Thank you guys for coming. Thank you all for listening. Yeah, pick up an issue if you haven't already and go online on highlandernews.org. And this has been another edition of Highlander Newsroom, hosted by the Highlander Newspaper at KUCR 88.3 Riverside. Thank you to Tina Bold, Eddie Valencia, Monica Taylor, Louis Vandenberg, Elliot Fawn, and all you regular and first-time listeners out there. Thank you.
Thank you for listening.